Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Sporticos Football Stories podcast. My name is Craig Hansen and today I'm joined by Akash Roy, a Leicester City fan, sports columnist and podcaster, as well as working full-time for the world-famous Sportskeeda football website. Akash contributes to Foxes of Leicester, a fan blog which is part of the Fansided Network. He considers himself a proud member of the Foxes of India community. It's a pleasure to have Akash on the show today. And I can't wait to get started. Don't forget, if you enjoy the show, we urge you to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. This is extremely important to us. We thank you in advance so much for doing that. It really helps a little podcast like ours to grow. Hey Akash, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and it's a privilege to come on your show to talk about Leicester City, because I am always pumped to talk about Leicester City anywhere, any platform that I get.
Thanks so much, Akash. It's our honor and privilege to have you on the show today. We're very happy to do that. We can't wait to get into everything Leicester related. But I guess the first thing we want to do is, as we usually do with our guests, to understand a little bit about how you became a Leicester City fan, because we've spoken to fans from across the world, of clubs from across the world, and it's not always the typical story, especially in your case, because as I understand, you're not from Leicester, and Leicester is not that sort of big club like Real Madrid or Man United that you'd expect this from. So for me, it's quite unique to hear your story. How exactly did you become a Leicester City fan?
So I was an ardent Premier League follower since 2013-14 season, and I have been following some of the huge clubs, and those clubs have huge vortex and fan following around India. Clubs like, just you mentioned, Liverpool, Manchester United, Arsenal, those big six clubs which are glorified in their own accord. So it pretty much, I was pretty much analyzing the teams who to support, because without a proper team, you are not regularly following or monitoring the season as you are supposed to. So I was cherry picking teams. I was liking some of them. I was not interesting others, how they functionated. So I was waiting and taking my time, and there was this new side that got promoted, Leicester City. I didn't look much at that time, but then when Estabian Cambiaso from Inter Milan just grazed to Leicester, and I thought, wow, such a decorated player, so many feathers around his cap, is coming to a club that is relatively unknown. And even at that time, I remember when Leicester won the Premier League, people were like Leicester. They couldn't even pronounce the name properly.
Yeah.
It became a thing of beauty to see what Estabian Cambiaso saw in this project or in this club. So I started to follow them around. The Manchester United game where they came back and just thrashed Manchester United in that fixture was a revelation for me. Then again, good times, I mean, passed too quickly and it went on and they were around, trailing around the relegation zone. And then they had one of the greatest escapes in the Premier League history. So I was hooked right from that point. But I was not yet a full-fledged fan. I precisely became a Leicester City fan at that moment when Jamie Vardy destroyed Ruud van Nistelrooy's record of consecutive goal scoring at Old Trafford. So that was my crowning moment to become a Leicester fan. And since then, I have not regretted my decision one bit.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of things there that we've touched on recently in the pod. That came up a couple of weeks ago, I think, Vardy's taking over Van Nistelrooy's record and coming back to thrash Man United, which is something topical that we can touch on later in the show, which perhaps has happened again recently. So you came to Leicester at the right time, I guess, because just after that, obviously, the unthinkable happened, which, again, we're going to go on to in more detail. But I wanted to ask you, first of all, a little bit about life in India as it pertains to football. So I wondered, is football on the rise there? Is cricket still the dominant sport? Or are more and more people starting to turn towards football in general?
So I have to explain a bit of history here, because when we were under the colonial rule of England, we, you know, played football a lot and our culture adapted to football more. And football was a major, major sport back then. And it came to an event where it was an all-British competition. It was played for a cup, a local title. And for the first time, a team named Mohun Bagan, comprised of 11 Indian working class men, comprised together to participate in that tournament and ultimately defeated a British regiment team. So since that time, football was the number one sport in India. But in one of the times when the invitations for the World Cup was given out, Indians were not eligible to compete because they were not adept at wearing footballing boots and playing the game. They played it barefooted. And so we missed an ever-glorious opportunity to, you know, start competing with the best. But we had the talent at that time, but we are not decorated or properly informed about the sport. So that took us a lot behind. And then came cricket, the 83 World Cup. India winning that, of course, gave a major boost to the countries and rolled a lot of eyeballs in that direction. So cricket is predominantly the largest sport, but football is slowly again gathering its momentum and there is a lot of Premier League supporters, other club supporters, even Indian football is on the rise because a lot of legends of the game such as Del Piero, Luis Garcia, Roberto Carlos, they came to India for this league we have now, Indian Super League, which is also, you know, the respective teams are collaborating and forming certain ventures with the teams that we have over here. So basically we work as a lower feeder club or even we get players from the academy to play in, represent us in the league. So that way football is formulating and there is a lot of effort to make football on par with cricket, but it will happen, but it will take a lot of time because without some international glory or some nationalism injected into it, it's a very difficult task to ask for.
That is absolutely fascinating because I knew that cricket had been sort of the dominant sport for many decades and that football was on the rise now with the Indian Super League. And as you said, lots of legends going over there and it's sort of growing in the same way it is in China. But I never knew this history that actually football was sort of the original superpower. That is fascinating. So when it returns to be on par with cricket, it will just be reclaiming its former crown. I never knew that. That is so cool. But you said that it's on the rise there now. Which leagues are the most popular? Is it just the English Premier League or do you also get coverage of like La Liga, Bundesliga? What's it like in terms of watching games on TV and popularity? Is that getting easier now?
It is getting a lot easier with this OTT platforms having their full-fledged services available to everyone's mobile devices. We get Premier League action, Bundesliga, La Liga. I think except Eredivisie, I think we get all the top six leagues, to be fair with you.
Okay, and as you mentioned, Leicester maybe are not one of the sort of traditionally big clubs. But has that changed since they won that first Premier League? Are you finding that, do you encounter many other Leicester fans? Do you have a community of some kind? I think you said that you're in Kolkata, is that right?
Yeah, I am in Kolkata. And here, football is appreciated, I mean, majorly. Because let me give you another anecdote, because if I don't, I'll not be spared by people living in Kolkata. So, Kolkata is a city that is mainly known for football in this country, because it was Kolkata again. I mentioned the team Mohun Bagan, where 11 men defeated the British regiment. It still remains to this day the oldest club of India. And the people who migrated from Bangladesh during the partition of the country of India and Bangladesh, those Bangladeshis who settled here in Kolkata, formed their own team, which is known as the East Bengal. And East Bengal and Mohun Bagan share a derby, which is known as the Kolkata Derby, which is like the Old Firm Derby in Scotland. And it is brutal because the stadiums are packed. Unfortunately, some people die due to circumstances. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. I have not been allowed by my family to visit one of their fixtures because it gets so violent and so passionate. But it is considered the fiercest derby in Asia. So you can imagine that. And it is held in the Salt Lake Stadium, which is the seventh largest stadium in the world, with a capacity more than 70,000 people. And it is skyrocketing at that moment when this derby is held twice in a single year. So that you can imagine. So, okay, so back to your question. What was the question?
So where you are in Kolkata, are Leicester growing to get to a level of Man United and Liverpool? And do you know other Leicester fans?
I do. Fortunately, we have 60 good supporters of Leicester who have been somehow fallen into this category of Leicester fans. And we have millions of Manchester United fans in the country. So that gives you a perspective how passionate these Leicester fans are. And I think we all joined in a certain moment where the club was enjoying its most successful stint of period, because you cannot imagine a team like Leicester winning Premier League, Community Shield, FA Cup in such a short period of time. And I think, judging by the people who have waited four times to reach the finals and then ultimately lose out the FA Cup, I think compared to them, we have experienced nothing. We haven't been experiencing the third tier of English football, not even the second. The moment we got our eyes rested on Leicester, there has been constant success. So measuring Leicester missing out on the Champions League spots doesn't really bother us that much as it does to other fans, because this is the time we should be remembering Leicester for, because this period is something special brewing at Leicester City.
Yeah, well, before we could get back to Leicester City, I just wanted to touch on that unbelievable story you told about that derby. There's a YouTube channel that I love. I think it's is it Copper 90 or something like that? They do videos called Derby Days, right? About the best derbies. They need to do that one, because that sounds awesome. I would love to watch that.
They did. They have that
video. Yeah. Oh my God, they have that video.
Yeah, I think two videos covered it perfectly. One is Copa 90 and another is from Rabona TV.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm watching that immediately after this podcast.
Okay.
Okay, cool. So to get back to your Leicester journey then. So you told me when you sort of came along just before Leicester sort of hit the precipice. Who were the main players who caught your attention? I know that Esteban Cambiaso was sort of your way in. And then after that, you mentioned Vardy. Was there anyone else who really caught your eye, who you really fell in love with during that early time?
I think there won't be a single fan who couldn't appreciate the football that was played between Mahrez and Kante at that time. Even centre-backs as Robert Huth and Morgan was exceptionally pleasing to see. So those are the players that caught my attention. And I think except Esteban Cambiaso and Kasper Schmeichel, I didn't know any good players into that squad. So it was a completely new subject for me to find out slowly how this club has been formulated, what was his history, what did they achieve, how the struggles were in the old times. So the more I knew, the more passionate I became. And eventually, when we won some of the leagues, I eventually cried. I didn't even know that in my heart, a team that resides in England and I have to wait a few years to visit the King Power Stadium would encase my heart to some extent that I am too fond of them and I will be representing them in a few years' time.
Well, that is beautiful to hear. Do you have a sort of plan then in place, or at least in mind, to get over to the King Power?
I actually did. It was my father's and mother's 25th anniversary last year, and we planned to visit, but this pandemic just derails that plan. And we're going to reschedule it sometime later, because that was the perfect time, because my college ended and I had a lot of time in my hands to go for a vacation.
Oh, the pandemic obviously had so many impacts, wide ranging across the world. But I feel like there's so many untold stories of people who almost saw their beloved clubs and didn't. Because last week we had a guy called Tushar on the show, and he's a Dortmund fan, and he had pretty much the exact same situation where he was never in a better moment to see Dortmund. He was so close, everything was perfect, and then the pandemic hit, and now it's 10 times as hard, right? But do you still hold out hope that in the future that you'll get back to that situation where it's possible again?
Of course, right now it's an urgency for me because Vardy is getting older, and I would love nothing more than to witness Jamie Vardy and Kasper Schmeichel in flesh. So times are against me, but I will find something or the other to visit the King Power Stadium in the future.
Yes, awesome. I really, really hope that you can. So when you got started with Leicester, was it Nigel Pearson was in charge at that point when they did the Great Escape?
Yes.
How fondly do you remember Pearson? Because I think that it depends who you ask, but I think as far as I can tell, he's sort of an unsung hero in that whole period of time. What do you think?
I think he established the foundations that Ranieri eventually built upon, because to escape that relegation in such a time when nobody was placing bets on us to have that miraculous escape, he instilled something into that squad that remained prevalent in those times when we were eventually closer in clinching the title next season, because he planted the seeds, let's face it. He's an unsung hero, definitely, and he got the sack. I think every Leicester manager who gets the sack is at the right time, because they have contributed their capabilities and instilled them with their tutelage to some extent. But a rejuvenation of new formulas and tactics are needed from the next manager in line. So I think it was a perfect time for Pearson to leave, not discrediting anything that he did for a club. But it was Ranieri's time. I mean, Ranieri hasn't done such a magnanimous thing in any of the clubs that he has represented thus far. So that tells you that replicating one manager's success is just absurd. And I think Pearson did his own job, gained us the promotion, then survived the relegation, and Ranieri followed that on.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think Pearson is at Bristol City now in the Championship, I think, but I could be wrong on that. But assuming that he is, and one day, whoever he's managing, if he were to come back in an FA Cup game or something like that, do you think he would get a rapturous reception from the fans?
I think interacting with any fans that I have met, I think they hold enormous respect for our previous managers. So there's no doubt in my mind, if it's a competitive game, obviously we're going to be competing. But the respect stays in its own place, and we'll be respecting Nigel Pearson for whatever he has given us.
And I think to hear the way you speak about Ranieri and Pearson, and I think it's probably the same for a lot of your fans, you know, to speak with such respect and such sort of admiration, it's really nice to hear, because nowadays, you know, you don't always get to hear that sort of stuff. What I wanted to ask was, I feel like Leicester as a club, they seem to be a very wholesome club. They're almost everyone's second club, aren't they? At least in England, everyone loves them. They seem to be such a beautiful community-run club, such a diverse club in terms of their fan base and their city. You know, their owners are just fantastic. They're just a beautiful club. What are they like in terms of their online community? Because it seems like almost every online community is toxic, especially on Twitter. Some more than others. Is Leicester sort of the only hope for like a nice kind of community on Twitter, or is it still just equally toxic like everything else?
I wouldn't give them so much slack, because every community is toxic to some varied extent, and Leicester is no exception to this. Considering the other communities that you mentioned, I think we are less toxic, but definitely not something that you can formulate a template on, because a lot of people, when they get that online platform, it's very easy to formulate your opinions and to agitate people in order to, you know, get that 10 minutes of fame or your interactions, your tweets interaction with other players. Creating in a controversy is what this present generation thrives upon. So it's basically, at the end of the day, they get their fame, but it's not good for the whole community, because you are representing our club, you're representing the fans of this club, and everyone in this world can see you. So I think a little bit of banter here and there is okay, but, you know, calling out for the manager's head when the results are not going in favor, because it's, at the end of the day, it's a football game and results are going to end up in three possible ways. So you have to accept that sometimes you can criticize, but you should have a constructive criticism of the whole aspect, because nobody comes out as a winner when you're just rattling on and there is nothing constructive out of your conversation and your opinions.
Yeah, I totally agree. But as you said, it's normal in every football club, and not only football, but just in general, basically every community on Twitter, it seems. But in terms of the offline world, would you agree with me that Leicester has a sort of a good identity? How do you feel about the club's identity? And how would you describe it? Whenever you hear about a certain club, there's always certain connotations in your head, whether it's to do with the fans or the money they spend or whatever they achieve. There's different buzzwords. You might think glorious, or you might think, in the past with Leeds, it was dirty Leeds, or with Millwall, people think about their fans and violence when they hear their name. When you hear Leicester, well, when I hear Leicester, I think sort of, you know, just really nice club that everyone loves. How do you see the club's identity nowadays, offline?
I think a major portion of the identity of the club is represented by the owners, the fantastic owners that we have. First and foremost, having such an ownership is a blessing in disguise, because at first you don't know who is buying your club, but then when you see that they are respectful towards the fans' desires, they understand what the football club should be. It shouldn't be a passion project, it shouldn't be a money-making machine. It should generate its own revenues and have a little bit of success here and there. So that is the idealistic way and holistic way to approach in managing a football club. So I think we have gathered that perfectly, because Vichai and his son has not treated this as just another project for billionaires to invest in, but they have been passionate throughout. And even today, they have plans in place to, I mean, you can see our training facilities. It speaks for itself. It's one of the best in Europe. And considering it's one of the best in Europe, you don't, I mean, instantly think that a club like Leicester should be having one of the best training facilities. So that anomaly is basically the notable factor what our ownership does. It does, thinking in retrospect, for sustainability of the club as a whole. So that is very important. The second part is, as the owner are from Thailand, it gives us a lot of perspectives to look upon, because I think if they were like not people from other land, if you gather that respect first and foremost, it's very difficult to continue being a racist in terms of football, because we have seen racism as a divine problem. Not even, why did I use the term divine in terms of...
I guess it's been like eternal, maybe. It's ongoing, yeah.
So the ongoing problem has been, I mean, very, very hurtful to see. And when you have people from other lands who are Asian and you have respect for them, I think every community gathers some kind of respect. If you look at our team, players like Hamza Chowdhury, who represents this subcontinental side of India, Bangladesh and Pakistan, you get that on. You have Thailand bag managers, you have good players. You judge players on their playing styles and creativity, their talent. And it encapsulates a lot of your hate. Even if you are a hater, You shouldn't be, but even if you are, when you're supporting players from your team, you slowly, you know, become dissolved in that respect. So I think the ownership does a lot of contribution in that regard. Again, the good ideas that they bring about, I am a fan of it, because many people didn't understand at first. When we sold Riyad Mahrez, Kante, it was all for sustainability, because many clubs who come into the Premiership, let's take an example like Norwich City, they don't judiciously spend their money, they don't judiciously invest and sell players. So they are endangering their stay of stint in the Premiership. We didn't do that. We had a season, yes, we escaped out of relegation. The next immediate effect, with immediate effect, we scouted and we placed all our eggs in scouting. Then we got the job done. We got some few fantastic players. I mean, there is a hit and miss in this whole process. Don't get me wrong. We got Gorkhani Inla in our squad, who didn't turn out to be a great player. But yeah, out and out, we got some major players in that season who helped us to clinch the title. And again, it was a question of sustainability, because we're going to play Champions League football. So players like Kante, who we are getting a fair amount at that time, we sold them and ensured that we remain in the Premier League for another few years. And that's how a club progresses. You have to create your own talent. You have to take risks with the unproven talent, and you have to build the club around that. So the foundation is very important. The ownership is very important. And we have got one of the best managers in the Premier League. Despite some of the times we don't get the results in our favour, but that's football.
Yeah, 100%. I think every team is going to have some misses, of course. But when it comes to the Leicester scouting, I mean, it's just fantastic. They sell these players like Maguire for huge fees, and then they just go out and they find people like Wesley Fofana or Soyuncu for stupid low fees. And then in a few years, they're going to be going for big money. And they sell Kante, they bring in Ndidi, and it's like, There's always a sort of eye on the it's like the big clubs, they have to come to you and give you way over the odds to get the players that you pick up from. I know Kante was like 2 million from the French second division and stuff. It's I don't know what they're doing with the scouting there, but I think Man United wish they knew. Because if they could solve that, they'd spend a lot less money and they'd have a lot more success. But and that goes for all the big clubs, not just Man United. But to go back to the stuff you were talking about, the club's identity, I think it's true that the owners just transmit such a fantastic community ideal. I wanted to ask you, in terms of the community, you mentioned the investment in the training ground and the facilities and stuff like that. Is there a lot of investment in the city itself? Do you feel that the citizens of Leicester also benefit from having Leicester City on their doorstep?
I think the whole community does. Because when your club is represented, I think it's very evident from the structure of Tottenham Hotspur. When they built that NFL stadium, the new Tottenham Hotspur stadium, I think the community benefited from it a lot, because a lot of new businesses, new ventures get a lot of light and eyeballs to, you know, help them with their business to grow. And similarly, that has been with Leicester. I think the club's success is directly proportional to how the community and the city around it performs. And overall, getting recognition is the thing that matters in this day and age, because even if you look at small merchandise sellers or small replica, whatever you call it, I mean, custom.
Yeah, those like vendors, I guess you would say, outside the stadium and stuff.
Yeah, they get a lot of establishing businesses from all over the world now, because somebody like me who resides in India can order a stupid looking fox carved out of wood in somebody's backyard, and I can get fascinated by it, and he can earn. And desperately in times like this, when a pandemic is going on, nobody is doing that great. Certainly the internet and the global community helps. So that's my outtake on it. And I think, yeah, the club is respectful towards the community, and it's doing good, fair amount of charitable works and the things that you require to, you know, uplift the society as a whole around you.
I think it's beautiful to hear you speak so eloquently and so passionately about the club you love, and to mention being in tears during those days of success when you came around as a fan. I wanted to ask you about the transition that you've made from watching games as a fan to watching them as more of a journalistic pursuit. because as we're going to plug at the end, I'm sure, you are contributing to Foxes of Leicester, and you are, I guess you would say, a sports writer, at very least a budding sports writer. And I know that you have been working on projects connected directly to the club as well. So it's fantastic. I guess, when did that start, and how different is it to watch a game as a fan, just free, to watching with a sort of, you need to watch with more of an analytical lens? How was that process in the beginning, that adjustment for you?
So I never thought this opportunity would come. I have been always passionate for writing during my early school days, and certainly in my Leicester LCFC India group, somebody mentions that Foxes of Leicester are in requirement for a few contributors. So would you like to give it a try? I said, why not? Let's try. This happened in February of this year. So I just took my chances with no expectations of it ever materializing into what today it is. I just filled out my form. And then I think Tom, our editor, just connected with me, and I gave a few writing samples, and he just adored them. And that's how my journey began. And within months, I think, because it's a rarity to be a Leicester fan in India, so I got recognized by Premier League India, which is a verified handle on Twitter. They recognized me. A couple of other podcast hosts recognized me in India, and I get called often. Even I paired up by Neil's invitation in Beyond the 90 LCFC, which is a good channel of Leicester content, all things Leicester, and they get featured. They get players featured on that show. So I think it started to sort of build up from that February onwards, and before even I could recognize it, I was doing 3 to 4 jobs in writing department, because I was writing articles for Sportskeeda in terms of wrestling and football, where I was covering news from all over the world. And then I was also covering for Fansided's Everything Barcelona. So overall, I think it helped me, because I am a Leicester fan, but writing different articles in different websites for different teams gives you a overall compassion to show through your articles, and that has helped me to not be biased towards one side when you are taking up the pen to write. And in my case, I think that gave me a multidimensional view of football as a whole, to enjoy football more than just the results and scrutinizing our performance each day and every day.
Yeah, maybe it helps you be a little bit more positive as well in your analysis than negative. But what was it like in the beginning to go from just sort of, like I said, watching a game in a normal fan way to what did you notice about the experience? Did it make it a little bit colder to watch your team, or was it equally fun but just different?
I think when I didn't write anything, I watched the games based on the scoreline, and it was always, we're going to score, we are not scoring. It was a bit monotonous at that time. But when I got this tint of lens on my spectacles, I think I saw football as more engaging, because it can be monotonous to analyze every nitty-gritty of the sport, but nitpicking every individual and assessing them on your own accords, then trying to see if that player, you know, has a positive outcome in the next game or not. I think one of the toughest thing that you can say changed for me, my favorite player from Leicester City is Chanla Soyuncu, and recently when he was without his compass, that is Johnny Evans, he was not performing very well, and it was very hard for me as a fanboy to criticize the man that I adore so much. And that was the first time I realized that I shouldn't be biased at all, because as much as I love Soyuncu, his certain aspects needs not to be sugar-coated at this time, because the fans are not enjoying his performances and he needs to do better. So a lot of things change. I analyzed the formation, the tactical aspects of it, what was going on, everything. And I think it gave me a lot of extra eye to cover on the games. And now the games are a thing of work as well as something of passion. And those two interconnecting becomes a really, really pleasure. And I wait every weekend for some footballing action.
Yeah, that's cool. You can enjoy it in two ways now. And I guess it's sort of an important rite of passage, I guess, when you first have to sort of look deeper into your love, I guess, into Soyuncu. I mean, he had some difficult times for sure, and Turkey had a difficult Euros as well. So I'm sure he's lacking confidence, but hopefully he can boost back after his goal at the weekend. Hopefully he's feeling a little bit more confident. But speaking of analysis, I want to come on to the current affairs on the pitch, and how things are going in a footballing sense. But before we do that, we're going to take one very quick break. And we're back. So, Akash, this last decade for Leicester has been unbelievable. Winning the Premier League, you mentioned the Community Shield, FA Cup. I mean, the Premier League was probably the greatest underdog story in the history of sport, I think. I mean, it was even covered on... I saw even Joe Rogan had an interview with a guest that whose name I'm losing now, sadly, who was explaining to him the Leicester City story. I mean, even people who never even heard of football or Leicester City were all over this. Champions League, regularly going for the top four, all of this stuff on a minuscule budget, you would say, compared to competitors. I know this is a really difficult thing to sum up in just a couple of minutes, but how exactly did Leicester manage to do all of that stuff?
I think they realized it a bit late that whatever they were doing, because the first and foremost, as I read from Rob Tanner's book, who is a journalist for The Athletic, I read that the target of the season was to get to closer to the 40 points, which would avoid relegation. And while doing that, they did something magical, which the players didn't even ponder to think upon, because there was no break in that season. And, you know, after they reached that 40th mark, they saw like, okay, we are in a good position. Something can be happening out of this. We are in a favorable situation. Chelsea is not doing well. They are definitely not going to retain the title. And the title race that year was particularly interesting because Tottenham, Arsenal, everybody was at the top, which is not a very regular scene. So that instilled some of the belief in the squad, I believe, as a whole. And when you have completed your aim for the season, and you have done it before Christmas, so what do you do next? Why not take a chance of faith and try to do the unthinkable? So that way, I think the odds were so much in our favor, 5,000-1 to be exact. I think that gave the squad, like every player that you see were either rejects, they came in for free. Some of them were just bought peanuts to compare to other players that these big six... always
Danny Simpson won the Premier League. Unbelievable. Where's Morgan? Robert Huth. It's amazing.
So,
it's beautiful.
Like that team of misfits and rejects sort of tried to do the unthinkable, and I think that gives this story a beautiful impossibility factor into this whole thing. Because you mentioned Joe Rogan, you know, people who know this sport as soccer even were intrigued to know what it was, yeah. Because nobody understood how the odds were against us and how rare of an occasion it is in football. Because since Leicester, I haven't seen a single story that comes closer to it. And I don't think the way football's dynamics are changing and this new budget investments are coming, I don't see we're going to see David versus Goliath story yet again. So that was a factor. And how it happened, well, there is no explanation to that, because if there was, I think Claudio Ranieri would have replicated with Roma or somebody else. But I think it everything fell into place, and luck was a bit on their side, and that just happened. Those are the rare things that you hope you will see once in a lifetime.
Yeah, it's like you said, it can't be explained, and it captured the imagination of pretty much sports fans all over the world. And I think it's because you can, in terms of other sports, you can name some examples, you know, the classic of the Rocky story. And even in football, I mean, I would say maybe Montpellier would be an example. Lille last year would be an example. But none of them quite on this level of, in our league, it's just so impossible to do. And to go from being the team who were bottom the year, but I just don't know if that... I mean, Lille winning the league was crazy, but they are sort of one of the top three or four teams in this thing that Leicester did was unthinkable. But moving towards sort of nowadays, the success has continued. Brendan Rodgers came in. Maybe you haven't been winning the league and stuff, but there's been really great, consistent success, you know, challenging for the top four, playing really good football. I love Rodgers as a coach, but how sort of difficult has it been to fall at the last hurdle in terms of qualifying for the Champions League? I think, is it now 3 years in a row, or at least two, that you've sort of missed out on the last day?
So it has been 2 years. The last time Manchester United just defeated us in the last game of the season, and then Tottenham Hotspur did the same. And the heartbreaking in the last day of the season is just pathetic, because you don't have another game to rewrite the history, and it's done. It's done and dusted. So we have been playing at the Europa League. I hope that, you know, as I said earlier, that I am not too disappointed, because the first time when it happened, yeah, disappointment definitely was a part of it. But the next time, the similar thing happened, but with the additional winning of the FA Cup trophy and the Community Shield. So there was a bit of growth that was visible. And this few initial hiccups that we saw this season are perfectly understandable, because there is a new centre-back pairing. Fofana is out injured. Johnny Evans was not fit. So we understand, and we are very well aware of our situation and where we stand. Not expecting a top four finish even this season, but we'll get back to that later. But to answer your question, it was certainly disappointing. But the second time, I think we had the trophies to cover up for.
Yeah, for sure. The trophies have got to help. I mean, most clubs in the league would die to win the FA Cup, let alone the country, even just the league. They would be over the moon with it. It's still been fantastic progress, and it's good to hear that you still have that perspective, you know, to see that you are still in an unbelievable position. Playing Europa League football is amazing. I think that sort of kind of pretentious looking down on the Europa League, I think is starting to fade, which I'm happy about. I think people maybe did that a little bit in the beginning, but I don't think at this point people can really claim that that is not a good competition that you would want to win, given that Man United and Chelsea and these teams are winning it and trying so hard to win it. I think it's a perfectly valid European competition to be in. If Leicester were to win that, that would be an unbelievable experience. Would that be something, for example, that you think could be a priority behind the scenes? I mean, I guess neither of us know what the club are really targeting. But as an outsider, I would say, if I were Rodgers, they should be focusing on that. I know they had a really tough result against Legia Warsaw. Do you think they might be trying to go far in that? Because if I were them, I would. I would try and go far in the Europa League.
I think they should, not just because of winning the whole thing, because that is very tough to do at this point. But for me, every round gives you that added prize money, which should be an estimating factor for a club like us, because it can make a lot of difference when we start the season again next time, because it gives an additional funds to deal with and bring new players in. It is a project which should take at least 5 to 6 years to establish that constant dominance. And as you can see with the new ownership of Newcastle, they are going to be troubling that top six hierarchy again. So another new contender coming in. So with a gradual process, you can see the obstacles that has been put against us. So winning absolutely would be fantastic, but I don't think at this point we are ready to do it. We can go to the semi-final, even the final, but it would be too risky to predict that we can win the whole thing right at this point, considering all of our performances away from home and at home.
Yeah, of course. I mean, to win it would be fantastic, and it's definitely not something you could predict. But before the Champions League teams drop in, I do think you are one of the favourites on paper. So I think you should definitely prioritise it. But at the same time, you want to do well in the league, of course, and given this weekend's result, it looks like you might be bouncing back now, return of Johnny Evans. Do you feel that this sort of rocky start with Vestergaard and Soyuncu at centre-back, maybe now that's gone and things could calm down a little bit? Do you envisage some better results coming in the coming weeks with Evans back?
I think this last outing against Manchester United is basically you are putting a plaster on the problem, because Johnny Evans is typically that plaster, and we haven't found a remedy, a permanent solution to our center back problems and defensive problems, because Johnny Evans is a player who has been with Manchester United, and he has that vision that makes him so great, and his leadership in the back line does instill some kind of confidence to Sancho and Wesley Fofana. But without having a fit Johnny Evans or Wesley Fofana, Sancho just looks lost. There is lack of communication, because Ryan Bertrand and Vestergaard joining in from Southampton, definitely they are not gelling that well into the team. And again, a player like Vestergaard, who is so huge and tall, he's going to lose some of his attributes. And he's not that, he's lacking that split-second judgment. He's not that agile. He's not that rapid. And those things are not complementing to the style that Sancho is regularly habited to play. So coming out of his comfort zone and pairing up with Vestergaard was the initial problem that I think we'll be revisiting throughout the season, because the injury that Johnny Evans has is going to reoccur a couple of times, and he's going to be out for every few weeks. He's going to be out for a couple of matches, and that's a concerning factor that we have to deal with. He's not getting younger by any day, so there is that problem. And of course, the performance as a whole gives us a lot of boost and the confidence, and much needed confidence, I would say, because trailing in the 13th position in the league when the teams above you are not expected to be residing above you. So I think it was much needed, and residing at the 11th position now, I think it gives us a lot of perspective to look and assess what was going wrong. I think James Maddison was one of the players who sat in numerous video sessions in the Leicester press conference room to go over with the coaches what was going wrong in video sessions. So, and it has helped him. He looked a bit sharp in the match against Manchester United, and I am very happy about the result. I think it was just a brilliant display of football. The match was very, very passionately covered. Everything was great about that. But can we follow that up in Europa League, and can we create a replica of the same the next fixture is against Ivan Toni's team. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, going up against Ivan Toni isn't going to be easy when you've got these defensive issues. As you said, maybe it's a great result, but sort of long-term or medium-term, still some worries there at centre-back. But you mentioned Johnny Evans being the plaster that he is, and what a fantastic plaster. But also Jamie Vardy makes a pretty great plaster, because if you concede 3 goals because you're having some defensive troubles, you could always count on Vardy to pop up and score 4 goals for you, I guess. I think he's currently joint top scorer with Mohamed Salah again. I think last year he had a slight drop off and people were sort of murmuring that perhaps now is the end. Will there ever be an end? Will Vardy ever stop doing this? What do you think? How much longer do we have to enjoy Jamie Vardy just being one of the most underrated strikers in the world, I think? He's absolutely unbelievable.
I think he's going to stick around for at least 2 more years in his full capacity. And then he's going to show some kind of fatigue or something, because I would want him to go on forever, but it's not the case, and it will happen sometime eventually. And for that, we need to be prepared. And what was missing last year compared to this year, you know, 2 years ago, he won the Golden Boot. Last year, he just dropped his form because he was occurring an issue, an ailment. And even without Jamie Vardy and Kelechi Iheanacho, we didn't have proper squad depth in that department in the forward region. So Vardy was very skeptical about his role, because when you are depleted in your lineup, what do you do? I mean, do you play full-fledged aggressive football? And even if you occur instances where your player goes out, what, you don't have any options. And last season, we saw plenty of that similar problem in other departments. A lot of players were out injured. Though media covers Liverpool as the team that faced with numerous injuries, we had far worse injuries than them. And so that was basically it. But this season, bringing in players like Patson Daka, Kelechi Iheanacho being on great, great form, and you can trust him with minutes and he's going to make an impact. Then having some of the creative midfielders that now we do, and wingers like Ademola Lookman and Harvey Barnes, I think Vardy can sort of distribute the responsibilities to these players as well. And he's not expected to perform every game in and out, as has been the case for a lot of years. And shedding some of that responsibility into these young talents does give him a lot of extra rooms to exploit, because whenever he's not even scoring, he's drawing away those defenders along with him, the markers, and he's opening pockets of space, which gives players like Ilenac or any second striker or attacking midfielder the gap that they need to find the spaces and try out a shot.
Yeah, so he provides great movement and also assists, not only goals. So, and I guess with giving out that responsibility, spreading it around, maybe takes the pressure off him to do everything on his own. And then he actually ends up maybe scoring loads of goals too, because he's not really so worried about doing it. It just seems to happen. But I do think, yeah, there's a lot of... It's a fantastic squad, I think. Just hopefully will not be decimated by injuries this season. And hopefully you can get some kind of cohesion going again. With all of that in mind, in terms of the squad depth, the Europa League sort of responsibilities, playing on the Thursday night as well, all these competitions, all these fixtures, bearing everything in mind, what are your expectations for this season? What would represent a good campaign for you and for most sort of reasonable Leicester fans?
I would start by saying that anything above 10 would be good, considering the setback that we had to endure at the start of the season. Wesley Fofana going out, as I mentioned, third time in a row, was the thing that, you know, drained away a lot of our confidence. And similarly, as the fans did, the players did as well. As you can see, the defensive problems are not just going away; they are persistently, like, torturing us, tormenting us, I would say. And if you take statistics into account, you can see that Kasper Schmeichel has to deal with 16 shots per game. So when that kind of freedom is being provided to the opposition, obviously some of the balls are going to end up in the back of the net. And you can't have a strict policy to deny those oppositional threats. So the only thing that you can do is attack more, be counter-attacking more, and hoping for a result that gives you a lead. That has been the fundamental philosophy of Rodgers' side, as evident from the United game recently. And even with the fixtures against Napoli, I think we were failing to keep the lead alive. Whenever we got a two-goal lead, we weren't able to utilize the cushion that we earned for ourselves. And that was what was the critical element of us dropping a few points that would have been essential in the later part of the season. But anything above 10, I think, is a good result, because this is a season where a lot of teams are playing fantastic football, and there is that traditional top six which you expect to remain in that top six position, altering between themselves. But again, teams like, any teams that have got promoted or are mid-table teams, I think Brighton is doing fantastic job. Nobody expected at first Brighton is going to like fare so well in this season. And
Brentford doing great.
Brentford is again, yeah. Nobody expected Brentford and Watford to do half the things that they are doing right now. So a lot of competition, and mid-table competition is vast, because West Ham is into the equation. Southampton, they're going to get points, and they're going to be... Aston Villa has a solid lineup of players. They have sold Jack Grealish, but has attained incredible players, incredible bowlers, I would say. So
yep.
It's a very tough competition. I think any fan would say top six finish, but I'd be content with anything above 10 at this point, because the competition looks very, very, very tough.
Yeah, and I think that's it's sort of a compliment to the Premier League that's where we are at this point, that it's not, doom and gloom to say top 10. That's just how good it is. It really is that good now. You have, like, the top six, and then you have Everton and West Ham and Leicester. There's so many unbelievable teams that it's being in the top 10 is good. It really is. And I'm sure a cup run would be, of course, loved. I know that there were a couple of League Cup wins in the late 90s and early 2000s. Maybe we could add a League Cup to this sort of recent glory period, going far in the Europa League. All these things would be great. Before we come on to the Twitter questions that we have, let's just spare a moment for Wesley Fofana, because I think he's 23, right? Or He's very young. He's
20.
And to hear he's 20, even younger, that's unbelievable. Only 20. And to hear the way you and many pundits and experts speak that, oh my God, you know, they've lost Fofana. What are they going to do? For him to be so integral at only 20 is something that I think more people need to talk about. That is unbelievable. Where can he go in his career? I mean, where is the ceiling for Fofana? How big a player can he become for club and country?
I think whatever I have seen of him, he's a very good decision maker, and split second decisions come to him as he has been playing this game for a long, long time. And that is what precisely makes him a player of, you know, who doesn't look his age, doesn't play his part as you are supposed to see him. So I feel like sky's the limit for him, because obviously he's gonna leave us at some point down the line. And big clubs like Real Madrid are already is interested in him. And we are not very good keeping our talents to ourselves, because, again, history matters. Constant success and validation does matter to keep a player for too long. I'd be happy if he stays with us, you know, five years at least of his career. I think we can do great things with players like him. And Leicester is a breeding ground for talent. And when you have attained that kind of a talent that pundits are relishing you, I think you could do a lot better. And he's definitely one of the stars, because, you know, all the attention goes to forwards, but in the aspect of defense, he's one of the generational stars that we're going to produce from Leicester. And I hope that everything stays in his favor and there is not a lot of injuries to deal with, but this is a fantastic player. And obviously, he's very bold and very sweet and charming. So I always enjoy the enthusiastic approach that he brings to the whole squad.
Just another talent that you've discovered and brought through, like Kante and Mahrez and numerous others, that's going to go on to great things. And I just I think that we should definitely spend more time as a football community giving him props, because for a club as big as Leicester to be so reliant on such a young player, it's just unbelievable stuff. But we now want to come on to some questions that we have from Twitter. But before we do that, we're going to take one very quick break. And we're back. Okay, so we have quite a lot of questions from Twitter actually today.
You've got mail.
I think last time I checked it was at least 9. So some of these we may have covered in our conversation. So if we have, we'll just sort of, we'll just go over them briefly. Okay, so First of all, we have two questions from, and I'm going to try my best to pronounce all of these names as well as I can. So the first one is, I think, Shagnik Mukherjee.
You're perfect with Indian pronunciations.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that, Akash. Okay, so first question is, what are the things that we will be focusing on during the winter transfer window? And when can we expect a fully fit squad? So let's separate this into two. First of all, winter transfer window, what are going to be the priorities? What are the key areas that you need to be looking at?
I think during the winter transfer window, we're going to get Wesley Fofana and James Justin back from their injuries. So I don't think we're going to invest anything in this winter transfer window. I think a lot of our problems, the solutions to that problems lies in the injured department at the club. And we have those answers available, but they will be unlocked after Christmas and we'll be good to go.
Okay, that makes sense. And when will that be the case? So you think after Christmas is the time when you're going to have fully fit squad, everyone together, and then you don't really need to invest, right? Because you already have a great squad. You're just suffering from injury difficulties.
Yes, precisely so.
Okay. A third question from Shagnik. This is a hypothetical situation. Leicester doesn't qualify for the top four, doesn't win the Europa League. Brendan Rodgers gets sacked because of this. Who would be the best person to replace him and why? And what can that person bring to the squad? So that is a big hypothetical. I mean, Rodgers is one of the most sought-after managers in the league right now. I think he's absolutely fantastic. But let's assume that you have a complete nightmare. It would have to be a really catastrophic one, I think, for him to get sacked. I'm sure you agree. Let's assume that does happen. Who's next on the list? Who would you bring in if you were in charge?
I would ponder my direction towards two specific managers whom I respect and adore for their individualistic capabilities. The first one would be Gasperini, who is the manager of Atalanta and is doing a fabulous job since he has inherited the club. A pretty much similar club like us. They play a lot of attacking, counter-attacking football, and Gasperini has brought the best out of each talent that he has inherited and is giving anybody a run for their money. The second one is obviously from the free agency, Antonio Conte, a serial league winner. I think that speaks volumes why I would want him at the club right now. If those things happen, I hope they don't. But if those things happen, I would only be looking at these two individuals.
Yeah, and I think it's a valid conversation to have anyway, but probably just not in the really short-term future that, you know, this hypothetical situation. I don't think that's obviously going to happen. I'm sure Shagnik doesn't either. I think Rodgers will continue doing great things. I think he will leave in the next few years, but it will be quite the opposite circumstances. He'll be leaving because he's so fantastic. And at that point, it's good to think to the future, right, that who could come in. And two great names you mentioned there. I would go with Gasperini. I think he fits the characteristics of the club much better. I think Conte is great, but has a tendency to sort of bring a certain toxicity with him sometimes. And he's very much about sort of high investment projects. And I think Gasperini, on the other hand, loves working with players and loves doing special things in terms of tactics and motivation. He would be fantastic for you. Moving on to our next question. Again, forgive me for my pronunciation. It's from Prashanth Vamanan.
Yeah, nailed it.
And nearly Prashant, yes, maybe, yes, without the H.
H, yes.
Prashant. Okay, so Prashant asks, what would you be personally happy with, a top four spot or Europa League, to win the Europa League? Is either of those realistically achievable given the current start to the campaign? So first of all, which would you choose, top four or winning the Europa?
So obviously that's the answer in itself, right? Top four finish at this point looks very unrealistic. I think we shouldn't be hoping for a top four, because top six still looks kind of possible, but top four I would definitely not even consider. And going by the Europa League on its own, even if it didn't give us a berth in the Champions League, I would still go for the Europa League title, because a title or a trophy is better than anything that's available out there. I think that cements your legacy, gives you a place in history, and it's unmatched. It's unparalleled.
That's a fantastic answer, and I so agree with you, because as you said, even if winning the Europa League didn't qualify you for the Champions League, I would choose, as a football fan, not only that, but even the FA Cup or the League Cup, to win a trophy, to celebrate, to have that amazing day like you had at Wembley only a few months ago. I mean, let's take the other possibility. Let's imagine you qualify for the top four every year for 10 years. You go out of the Champions League in the last 16. Nothing really happens. You never really win anything, but you're always sort of playing the big matches versus actually winning and having that celebration. I think for me, it's a much more beautiful thing, much more important than the teams you play is the day to celebrate. So, and in this case, it would be great because you have both. You'd also qualify for the Champions League. Next question from Aman Shrivastava. And Aman says, realistic targets for this season, league position, cup progress, Champions League, Europa, or Conference League. So we've touched on this a little bit. You're sort of saying realistic target is top 10. Would you be happy to qualify for the Conference League like Spurs did, or would you actually rather finish 8th or 9th and avoid that competition?
I think the fan in me says to qualify for any competition that we can get, but realistically approaching that question, I think it's better not to qualify for the Conference League, because again, you're going to be playing against Minos. Your dates are going to be occupied in an already calendar that is filled with scheduling. You have to play a lot of competitions. So I would be avoiding that just to get my players some rest and focusing on the league and the other prospects more. Because winning that, again, if Europa League doesn't get its fair share of respect and fame, the Conference League is not going to be fearing that much, and it's always going to be that third trophy that UEFA plays this season. So just in its inception, it's very harsh and critical for me to say that. But again, I would, for my personal reasons, I would say my side should be looking to, you know, avoid that competition at all costs.
Yeah, it takes some time to build up that prestige. I mean, Europa League at this point, I think, has earned its stripes, and I think it's a real legitimate thing. And I think the Conference League too, if you're maybe a AZ Alkmaar, for example, or a sort of mid-level European club, not a small club by any means, but also not a huge club, I think it's a good thing to shoot for. But in Leicester's case, you should be shooting higher. We've sort of covered a lot of what a man goes over, but let's go on to the cup progress. I mean, what do you expect from the cup? What would be what would you be happy with? Sort of quarters, semis in the FA Cup? Do you think they should try and win the League Cup, for example? Should they prioritise cup competitions?
We won the League Cup when the millennium was starting, and it has been a long time since we haven't really tried to win it, I would say. But this season, I think it will be, again, a repetition of the old times, because a lot of the players who aren't getting featured regularly, and that club's the club's outlook to that competition is very much the same for any club, because they are going to be feeding those players who are not getting their minutes properly, and they will be placing a makeshift lineup with them and expecting if they progress well and good, and if they reach the semifinals, maybe a better team contends for the trophy. But the approach is going to be same. A lot of luck depends, because when you are feeding an underfed team, if they win, good, we can expect. But again, it's heavy reliance on some unproven talent and some players who don't even make the bench. So that's one thing. And in the FA Cup, I would love a semi-final run. Till the semi-final, it would be okay. And beyond that would be perfection. But till semi-final, I don't think we should be dropping out of that tournament, because we are essentially defending the title.
Yep, 100% should be prioritizing that to defend your trophy. Question from Foxes of Leicester. Who are the most crucial current three Leicester players?
In terms of making impact and crucial aspects, I would say Kasper Schmeichel, Johnny Evans and Jamie Vardy. They are unmatched. Their influence is unmatched. With those three in order, I think the Leicester side can be clueless about how to shape out a game, how to chart courses and how to orchestrate overall. So I think those three are the like pole stars for Leicester, and I think when they start, a thing cannot go wrong.
And this next question is from the Fanspire official, and the question is, what's up with his taunting celebrations to the away side? I don't know if this is about you on Twitter or Jamie Vardy at the stadium. I'm assuming it's about Jamie Vardy. What do you make of his celebrations?
So all the celebrations I have watched, I think he does those celebrations only to the sides that have an animal to represent their crest. He did it with Wolves. He did it with Crystal Palace. So I think if you are having a mascot or any form of animalistic tie-ups, then you're going to get that celebration regardless how loved you are by all the fans and appreciated.
That is so funny. I never knew that. That's so funny that he picks them based on that. That's awesome. I'm so happy to hear it. I was hoping that at the Man United game he was going to follow Andros Townsend's lead and do the celebration, but unfortunately not. Hopefully we'll see a couple more of those this season. Moving on, we now have a question from, I believe it's Priya Darshan, or it could be Priya Darshan KR, maybe? Or
second one sounds good.
Yeah, and the question is, will we continue with Vardy and Nacho up top?
I think we should be doing that, because whatever you try and test, and if it works out, there should be no deviation from your initial thought to go into that game, because that thing is working. It's slowly building up its own formula and sticking with that. I mean, Brendan Rodgers is a very stubborn man when it comes to 4-4-2. And without true strikers up front, you cannot play Jamie Vardy with somebody else. And when you play Jamie Vardy alone, then it doesn't complement his style at this season, because he is slowly aging, he is losing some of his traits, he is becoming more of a playmaker, assist provider, orchestrator, rather than a goal scoring machine. So you have to incorporate somebody who can take the load of him. And I think Kelechi Iheanacho, the numbers prove it, and he has been an exceptional talent. He takes the risks, he takes the long range efforts, which a lot of players would be disheartened because they don't always, you know, end up at the back of the net, and often your teammate screams for a pass, but you take the chance of faith and it doesn't convert. So he's that way very bold to be attempting and scoring some of those goals. I think it's a fantastic option for Rogers at this point to have somebody like a Patson Daka, who is rapid fast, to have that asset and play those cards at the right time in a game after, I think, 70th, 60th minute mark. And either of the striker who is having a rough day can make the alteration for him, and then we're good to go again and we can fire on full cylinders.
I totally agree. And I think that with the sort of diversity you have of styles with the players you have up there, with Vardy, with Daka, with Iheanacho, with Perez, I think that the reason it can work so well is because Rodgers is such a good tactician that it's not just about sort of who's going to be the starters. There's every game, every team has a different sort of puzzle for him to solve. And he's such a great manager when it comes to knowing which pieces to use at which time. And you have so many different pieces. But I think in general, Vardy and Iheanacho is a great partnership. We just touched on Daka, but in a little bit more detail, we have a question from Vaibhav Kotiyal, and Vaibhav asks what your expectations are for Patson Daka. I mean, it's his first season, could be difficult to adjust. What do you expect from him going out this year?
I think we are straight away, we are grooming him to take over Jamie Vardy's role in the starting lineup some point after 1 or 2 years. And that grooming part has been earning him a lot of time in the bench. And I was a little skeptical at the start because I was thinking that, you know, this fresh talent, this Zambian talent comes from the Austrian Bundesliga. He's red hot, and to not trust him and giving him minutes could make him a rusted player, that you overall he loses the spark. But the way Rogers has been incorporating him into his traditional lineup, and as you saw, the first goal, always it's tough to get that first one, but then the player settles down, his mind is into the game, because draughts are difficult for any player to deal with. So I think he will be utilized like that. I think he will be featuring a lot in cup games and other stuffs, even in Europa League. But in the Premier League, it's going to be Vardy and Kelechi starting most of the days, and he's going to make regular introductions from the bench. And he's going to be assuming that role, at least for this season. From the next season, we can have a completely rework of the structure, and maybe Kelechi Iheanacho and Patson Daka starts, or Vardy or Patson Daka starts, depending on the form that they end up in.
Yeah, it's a good idea to sort of bed him in slowly, and then maybe next year we can see where we go. We have one final question from Priya that I unfortunately missed. Sorry about that, Priya. The question is Castagna the number one left back at Leicester?
I think he is, because again, we have to mention Gasperini when we are talking about a former Atalanta player. He made a midfielder work in two diversified roles, and he does that with so much perfection that it helps us at this precise moment. I think when you have, you know, problems at every level, I think Ricardo Pereira should be starting. Then you can't, I mean, Castagne was starting, alternating between, you know, as a wing back, sometimes on the left, on the right. But it was based on the injuries that Rogers was dealing at that time. And he was a makeshift replacement for any problem that Rogers was in defensively. So when James Justin got injured, he assumed the role in that flank. When Ricardo Pereira was not fit, he resumed the role in another flank. And right now he is, I think, playing some of the beautiful, bold football, because in an earlier instance, when I think it's Crystal Palace, when Hamza Chowdhury was rusty and not doing quite well in the initial minutes, a lot of the mistakes that was done left and not dealt with by Hamza Chowdhury was ultimately swept up by Castagne, and he was doing a fantastic job and making us look all that beautiful that we certainly didn't deserve to look. So yeah, Castagne is a very adept player. He can, I think, the positions that he rotates between is perfect for him, because he has started off as a midfielder, now he is a wing back. So contributing to that factor, even in defensive and offensive aspects, he's an asset for us at this precise time in the campaign.
Well, Akash, thank you so much for answering all those questions, and thank all of you guys for sending those questions in. We really appreciate it. Now we're going to finish off the show, as we always do, with our little quiz called Do You Know Your Heroes? So, Akash, don't worry too much about this. Sometimes people get way more nervous than they need to. It's just a little bit of fun. Some of these questions are going to be quite contemporary and within your sort of period of fandom. Some of them will be going back into the history books to maybe we'll know how much history you've been reading. But one thing's for sure, we're just going to have a little bit of fun. So, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay, first question. A good trophy that all clubs around Leicester's size should be gunning for is the League Cup. But how many times have the Foxes already won the League Cup?
Two times at the start of the century. If they have won it previously, I have no account of that. So I would say two.
Very close. The answer is three, because they did win in 1997 and 2000, as you correctly mentioned. But they also won it in 1964. So perhaps this year they could be gunning for their fourth. Next question. Which player has made the most total appearances for the club in all competitions?
Definitely. I don't even know. Not going to attempt it.
Don't worry. This is definitely a person from the past that I had never heard of before I did my research. It's Graham Cross, who made 600 appearances between 1961 and 1975. Now, within your remit and within your fandom, which member of the current squad is the leading appearance holder? Very nice, correct. You have the point, but I don't suppose you want to have a guess at how many. It's difficult because it changed like literally last week. So
460, I would say.
Close, very close. 428. So in the last decade, between 2011 and now, the great Kasper Schmeichel has made 420 appearances for the club. Now, going back a little bit very much in history again, who is the club's leading goal scorer in history in all competitions? I don't suppose you've heard this name.
I don't know the first name. I think Chandler.
Very good. We're going to give you the point for that, because this guy's from 1923 to 1935. So just knowing the surname alone, I think, is definitely worthy of the point. It was Arthur Chandler, who scored 273 goals between 1923 and 1935. So we are 2 for 4 so far. Another question about the current squad. Which player in the current squad has scored the most goals for the club?
Jamie Vardy.
Correct. And I don't suppose you know how many? All competitions, this is.
154.
Oh, so close. 152. But you have the point anyway. But it's 152 goals. Between 2012 and now for Jamie Vardy. So we are 3 from 5. Next question is quite contemporary too, definitely within your years as a fan. What is Leicester City's highest recorded win in the Premier League?
Versus Southampton, 9-0.
Correct, very good. You have the point. I don't suppose you know when it happened.
2000 and... No, exact date, I don't know. Season?
No, don't worry.
Seasons before.
Yeah, try the season.
Two seasons before.
Two seasons ago. So 2019, on the 25th of October 2019, Leicester beat Southampton 9-0, which I think wasn't that something like their second 9-0 within a year or something, Southampton?
Yeah, I mean, they conceded again nine goals to Manchester United the next year.
Crazy, crazy times. A date to forget for Southampton fans, but one to remember for you. So we are 4 out of 6. Now we're going back into history a little bit. This is one of the legends of the club, I think. Which player earned the most England caps while playing for Leicester City?
Goalkeeper?
Correct.
Shilton.
Sorry?
Shilton.
Oh, very. Yeah, I could see why you would think that. But apparently it's Gordon Banks with 37.
Oh.
So there's been...
It was either...
I forgot about Shilton, to be honest. I forgot. So they've had two of England's most decorated goalkeepers in history, I guess, at Leicester. I totally forgot about that. Unbelievable. Okay, so we are 4 out of 7. This is to make it 5, our final question. We do this with everyone. It's sort of fun, gets you thinking. Besides England, which nation has the most players currently on the books at Leicester, not including youth players? So obviously the majority of the squad are from England.
It's going to be Belgium. Oh, okay, wait. Nigeria has...
No. You are correct. It is Belgium.
Okay, it's correct.
I had to be a little bit cheeky with this one because usually there's sort of a standout, but there was England with, 10 or whatever, and then there are a bunch of countries that had 2, but Belgium technically has 3 because Dennis Pratt is on loan at Torino. So I had to go with Belgium. So yes, Belgium with Youri Tielemans, Timothy Castagne, who you were waxing lyrical about earlier, and Dennis Pratt are the 3 Belgian players in the Leicester squad, which makes them the second most represented in the squad. So that's 5 out of 8, a very respectable score. Akash, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been so much fun speaking to you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Before we go, would you like to tell our listeners where they can read your stuff or listen to your stuff or anything at all?
So you have to go to Foxes of Leicester's website or even follow them on Twitter. They cover majorly all things related to Leicester. So whether it's match reports, analysis, pre-match, post-match, everything we do, even transfer rumors that you have all been, I think, agitated by because it's so much. You can follow me there. And also I write for Sports Kira, which is the second-ranked website in India. So you can follow that as well. They cover a variety of sports ranging from the Olympics to football, everything encapsulated in one. And you can watch our post-match analysis on Beyond the 90 LCFC, which is done by Neil, hosted by Neil. He's a fantastic lad who does all sorts of work with Leicester. So I hope we meet in the future again.
Oh man, I think I noticed also from your bio that I think that we can speak off mic for about a day, I think, because also you're a UFC fan. And a pro wrestling fan, right? Are you WWE or AEW?
AEW,
nice. We could talk all day about the recent sort of arrivals in AEW that I'm sure we're both very excited about. But to let you get out of here in under an hour and a half, I'd like to say again, thank you so much for coming on to our little podcast. We've really, really, I know we're all going to really enjoy listening to you. I've really enjoyed speaking to you. And I very much hope we will meet again in the future.
Yeah, same aspirations reside on my side as well. It has been fantastic to talk to you.
Okay, Akash, thanks so much. Have a great day, buddy. Thanks so much for listening to the Sportacos Football Stories podcast. Please like, share, and leave 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. This is crucial to a show of our size. We can't thank you enough for doing that. Also, if you enjoyed today's podcast episode, please tell a friend, online or offline. That really helps a small podcast like ours to grow organically. Head to www.sportacos.com for live streams, data, statistics, and much more from the world of football. You can also follow us on Twitter at sportacos.com. You can follow myself at Craig Sportacos. And we would love to read out the thoughts and questions of our listeners, many of which we did today on the show. So please feel free to tweet those to me anytime, or send us an email to show@sportacos.com with your opinions or your questions, and we'll get to them on the next episode. Thanks again so much to Akash for coming on to speak to us today. Thanks so much to you for listening, and see you on the next episode of the Sportacos Football Stories podcast.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.